The Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you, Lord.
The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." The Lord replied, "If you had faith the size of a mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted in the sea,' and it would obey you. Who among you would say to your slave who has just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, 'Come here at once and take your place at the table'? Would you not rather say to him, 'Prepare supper for me, put on your apron and serve me while I eat and drink. Later you may eat and drink.' Do you thank the slave for doing what was commanded? So you also, when you have done all that you were ordered to do, say, 'We are worthless slaves. We have done only what we ought to have done.'" This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. Before him lies this bottomless pit, this vast chasm, and all there is this doorway on the other side and a book in his hand that tells him he's supposed to go over there and cross this chasm, but there's not a way. There's no path. And so you hear him process out loud, "It's impossible. Nobody can jump this." And then he references his book and he realizes and says out loud, "It's a leap of faith." Name that movie. Oh, I hear it. Okay, we'll get to it if you haven't gotten it yet. "You must believe, boy," his father speaks in agony as he gasps for breath, having been gravely wounded. And so, Indiana Jones, right, lifts his leg up at like a 90-degree angle, and he steps forward and he plants it firmly over the chasm on this invisible pathway that's before him. If you don't know the reference, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is actually on Netflix right now. 30 years old. 30 years old this year. The disciples are following Jesus himself, and still they cry out, "Increase our faith." As though more faith would somehow help them on this path forward over this seemingly deep chasm, because Jesus' standards are so high. He's preaching a way of radical forgiveness, a kind of forgiveness that forgives a person even seven times over. Jesus has taught them that they're never to be the one who causes a more vulnerable follower to sin. And then before that, there's the parable that we had last week, where Jesus acknowledges the consequences of not caring for or noticing the poor in our midst. So it's like, how can you live like that? There's no way that you can walk that path. How can anyone step out on that invisible way without more faith? And so the disciples cry out, "Increase our faith." They feel like they need more trust. They need to know how to get there the way that's before them, even though they can't see it. And Jesus teaches that it's not the amount of faith. It's the fact that faith is there at all. Even a tiny amount of faith. Mustard seed sized faith is enough to take that next step. And not just the next step, but that small faith has the power to do mighty and unexpected things. Things like asking a mulberry tree to pull itself up by the roots and plant itself in the heart of the sea. This passage comes to them in the middle of a journey, a travel narrative, where Jesus and his followers are headed to Jerusalem, where together they're going to face a really troubled way, a way of sorrow and suffering and death. Still, Jesus steps forward on that way to the cross, and the disciples step forward as they follow Jesus there. In my Bible, this section is known as some sayings of Jesus. Four diverse teachings that are paired together in chapter 17, of which we get the last two today. This teaching on faith first, and then some words about slavery, which hit us kind of oddly in this current context. Jesus concludes this section by reminding his disciples that the role of a slave is to do the work of a slave, to do the work associated with what you are purposed to do in this life, And to do it without expecting thanks in return. And in American context, that word slave doesn't sit well with us, does it? It evokes memories of incredible suffering inflicted through antebellum slavery, of which the onset was only 400 years ago. And sadly, slavery is not just a thing of the past. Modern slavery is yet with us, and here in central Wisconsin. The average age of a victim of human trafficking is between age 12 and 17. And there are three types of slavery that have been found within our state alone. Forced migrant labor, commercial sexual exploitation, and indentured servitude. So is Jesus endorsing slavery in these forms? No, absolutely not. And I want to say that clearly because it would be easy for us to skip over this passage altogether and just focus on that first part about faith. But we're called to wrestle with the whole text, and it's a living word that touches our hearts today. So if you look back to the context, this time when this passage was written, about 30% of the population were slaves. In urban areas like the city of Rome, that number increases up to about 50%. Slaves were ensured survival by being housed and fed by those that they served. Their work was met with some, but not fair, compensation. Slavery was an institution at that time, and it cared for the poorest of the poor. And Jesus is not speaking as to whether or not that system is ethical. What he is doing is he is teaching that those who serve at the pleasure of others do not invert the role and expect that they can receive payment or thanksgiving before the work is yet complete. He likens this to how we are called to serve God as workers in the kingdom, and we have a job to do, and it's not yet complete. We serve God because God has set us free. Martin Luther, in his work, The Freedom of a Christian, puts forth a paradox that Christians, you and I, we are Lord of all and completely free of everything in Christ. And as a Christian, we are also servants, completely attentive to the needs of all. As Jesus teaches, or as Luther teaches on the subject of Romans 13:8, which says, owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, he reminds his people that it is the very nature of love to be attentive to the other and to serve the one who is loved. So as is the case with Christ, Luther writes. In the same way, as followers of Jesus, God doesn't owe us anything. We can't put God in our debt. When we have done the best that we can to follow Jesus authentically and to step out in faith and to serve the one in need, then we have only done what God has asked of us, our duty. And those who have done their duty have only done what they would be compelled to do in the understanding of who they are and who it is that they follow and serve. Isaac Watts is probably best known for writing the hymn Amazing Grace. But he also wrote the hymn, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross. And he gets at this in the lyrics of that final verse of the hymn when he writes, were the whole realm of nature mine, that were an offering far too small. Love so amazing, so divine, demands my soul, my life, my all. So today we link these two concepts side by side for reflection. Stepping out in faith, even with little faith, and serving God with our all, our everything, because it is indeed right, our duty, and our joy. God has given us all that we need to survive and provides daily bread, but God also teaches us and shows us how to forgive and then forgives our sins. God teaches us and shows us how to be about the work of unconditional love and offering a peace when the circumstances of this complex and mortal life have done their worst to threaten that peace. Yes, there are seasons when it seems like faith is in short supply. Sometimes I wonder why my life looks the way it does. I don't know if you wonder that too. It's so far removed from what I thought it would look like when I was a little girl. And can you have imagined all that life holds for you now, even just 1 year ago? Things change so quickly. Could have imagined 10 years ago that you'd be sitting here and let life would look like this now? I grew up the daughter of Methodist parents and have struggled with confidence my entire life, but now I'm a Lutheran pastor and I have to speak in front of people for a living. Called to share words with all of you about how it is that God might be working in our midst. And each time I preach, somehow God musters up the confidence within me to speak, even though it feels like every time I do, I'm stepping out on this invisible way, this path forward that I don't know what kind of fruit it will produce for the kingdom in all of you as it takes root and grows. I can't know what God has in store next, but what I'm trying for these days is just to be as faithful as I can, to take steps forward toward the future that God has promised and is promising. And I know that God will be with me every step of the way, even though I may know nothing about that way. Jesus reminds his disciples that even a little faith is plenty. And somehow that little faith is multiplied into a response that allows for these little seeds of faith to grow into something that could change the world. Soon we're going to sing together the hymn of the day, and it's called When Peace Like a River. But many people know it as It Is Well With My Soul. The song was written by Horatio Spafford, who was an attorney that lived in Chicago, who had heavily invested in real estate prior to the great Chicago fire that consumed the Windy City in 1871. He lost almost everything. And at about that time, his only son, age 4, succumbed to scarlet fever. And so Horatio got busy, and he drowned his grief in work, and he poured himself into the rebuilding of a city that left over 100,000 people homeless. Later in his life, Spafford would set his wife and children sail on a voyage home from their travels in Europe, where an unfortunate accident would sink their boat, and the remaining children would perish at sea. His wife survived, but just barely. She was one of 47 who survived. 226 others had perished. Having sailed to join his wife, when over the spot where the wreckage was believed to be, Spafford said to himself, "It is well. The will of God be done." Talk about a little seed of faith. It is well, and a mighty act of faith at the same time. And from these words, he wrote the hymn that we will sing together. For the work that we are about and for the faith that we have, it is well. And we know that it is well because it is Christ himself who finished that work that we could not. Where on the cross, we can say in faith that it might not all be right, but it is well. It might not all be healed or forgiven or whole, but it is well. Because Christ who died did rise and claim the victory over death. Impossible for us, but not for God. And for that victory, it is well, it is well, it is well. Thanks be to God.